If you're visiting with us, just want to invite you to join this journey that we've been on for the past 2.5 months. And that is, we are reading through the entire Bible together, not only reading, but also studying at 9:30 every Sunday morning. We have a class that meets in here where we study the books that we would have read that previous week. Last week, we read through 1 Samuel. This week, we'll be reading through 2 Samuel. Next week's class will be on 2 Samuel. And I just want to invite you, if you're visiting with us, if you want to participate in that, you're more than welcome to. We have notebooks available where we can give you a notebook full of the information that we go through every week. If you don't have a Bible, we will give you a Bible free of charge. Please see me. I'll give you a Bible free of charge. There's right there. Bling. And also, throughout the building, there are some CDs that have the New Testament on MP3. And please feel free to just take one of those. And again, if you can't find one of those, just find someone you think belongs here, and they'll take you to that MP3 player. Right now, I need a couple volunteers, and by volunteers, I mean I'm going to pick you and you come here. All right, so I need Rebecca Johnson to join me up here on this side. Rebecca, this is for bragging rights. You're going to represent this side. From this side, I need Brian Rudolph. Please join me up on stage. By the way, I would like to report a crime. Brian Rudolph stole my biceps, and I want them, y'all can stand right down here. I want them back. Now, where is it that you work, Hollister? Is that where you work at Easton? And they hired you because you're a good salesman, or you have big arms? What? You don't know? You don't know. So what is your job? You just stand there and say, buy something? Is that what you do? Is that how it works? I had a shirt like that when I was 6. Okay, here we go. We are about to play King Trivia, okay? I'm going to ask you questions about some famous kings. Go to that next slide for me. Famous kings. Now, this is how we'll do it. I'll ask the question, and you have to yell your name as loud as you can if you know the answer. That's going to be your buzzer. So, you know, you can pretend a buzzer and say, you know, Rebecca or Brian, and you can help me judge who says it first, and you get the chance to answer that question. Now, the winner of this game will be the recipient of some great cash and prizes, or a couple bucks. Anyway, here we go. All right, you ready? Question number one, famous kings. Now, they start easy, and they get more difficult. Okay, you ready? You ready? All right. This king's love interest serenaded him with, "Can you feel the love tonight?" The Lion King, yeah, that's 1 point for this side. Very good. All right. I'll tell you now, hold up. Now, it gets harder. All right, here we go. All right. This king claims you can have it your way. Okay. Burger King, very good. All right. Now, okay, that was a little more difficult than the first one. All right, this one is going to be hard, okay? This king shared with millions his famous dream. Rebecca, oh yeah, I heard you. What did you say? Who? Martin Luther King. Yeah, she got it. Yes. That's not. She said Rebecca. You said ah. All right, here we go. Too much lifting weights. It takes blood away from the drain. Okay, here we go. All right, here we go. Here now, this one probably is the most difficult one of all five. Okay, here we go. This king was the son of Henry the VII. She said, Rebecca, Henry VIII. Very good. You said, oh, got it. It's Brian. Okay, here we go. All righty. The last one. This is the tiebreaker, I think. All right. It's 2-2. All right. Here we go. This king, regarded as Israel's greatest king, started out as an aspiring musician and smelled like sheep. David. All right. Rebecca is the winner of a $5 bill, nice and crinkly and crisp. There you go. All right. Oh, very good. Throughout history, there has been this natural fascination and amusement with kings and queens. There's a story about King Louis the 11th of France, who was into astrology. Except when astrologers made predictions that he didn't agree with. One astrologer predicted that one of King Louis XI's women was going to die. And so he brought the astrologer in to kill him because he didn't like that prediction. But before he killed him, he asked the astrologer, he said, you're so good at what you do. I want you to predict to me when you, the astrologer, will die. And the astrologer said, I'm going to die 3 days before you, king. So the king changed his mind, kept him alive. We have this fascination with kings and the stories that go along with them. We, even though we're in a democratic republic, we still kind of have a fascination with monarchs, like probably our most, you know, our biggest fascination is with Queen Elizabeth over in England. Queen Elizabeth and her son, Prince Charles, and the son who will follow them in the monarchical reign. We pay attention when there is news about the British monarchy. We become a bit enthralled with the spectacle of kings and queens. Now, most of what we see in these kings and queens deal with the lifestyle of these rulers, the money, the bling bling, the crown, the gold, the jewels, the big castles, and the mansions. These rulers are adorned in priceless adornments that dazzle before our eyes. In ancient times, however, kings weren't necessarily identified by their riches, although the riches came with that territory. Kings in ancient times were identified with their military prowess, strength, and victories. Not likely are we to see, you know, Queen Elizabeth fatigues in a helmet with a machine gun saying, yeah, bring it. Back then in ancient times, kings were known as great fighters, great warriors, great military leaders. As we continue the narrative of the Israelites, we find ourselves in a transition period. Up to this point, the Israelites were ruled by judges. And again, judges weren't the judges that we think of, judges in robes with a gavel. These judges were spiritual and military leaders that led Israel against their enemies. These judges didn't necessarily rule the entire nation. In fact, some of these judges only ruled in particular tribal regions. Some of these judges at times would only rule, for example, in the area of Judah or the area of Benjamin. The book of 1 Samuel tells the story of a transition away from judges to a monarchy. The Israelites found themselves as a nation in a unique situation. They were the only nation, a young nation, a budding nation, but a nation that, unlike the nations around them, they did not have a king. All the nations that surrounded them almost always had a king. It was as if the Israelites began to take notice of the setup around them and begin to say, you know what? We need a king too. If we're going to be legitimate in our place in this world, if we're going to be looked at as a legitimate nation, we too, like the nations around us, need a king. It's interesting that people have always longed for leadership. They long for a leader, someone to lead them. What do you know? God, over and over and over and over, declared himself to be leader of the Israelites. He declared himself to be king. Yet, the people wanted a real king. Now, 1 Samuel tells this story of transition in an interesting way. Along with depicting the narrative of how the monarchy came to be, 1 Samuel also teaches a lesson about the heart. And it does so by telling this tale, two tales in particular, or three tales in particular, a tale of two families, a tale of two kings, and finally, a tale of the heart. A tale of two families. In the beginning chapters of 1 Samuel, we read the heart-touching story of Hannah and the troubling story of Eli. We read of the plight of a woman, Hannah, who had to suffer watching her husband and his other wife have children while she couldn't. It was a source of deep emotional pain. Let's open our Bibles to 1 Samuel chapter 1. While you're turning there, put your finger here. Let's see who all brought their Bibles this morning. Hold your Bibles up. See if we brought them. All right. Once again, I am just amazed that I have someone holding up a cell phone with a Bible on it, but I love that. 1 Samuel chapter 1, we're going to be in verse number 3. It says, year after year, this man, the husband of Hannah, Elkanah, this man went up from his town to worship and sacrifice to the Lord Almighty at Shiloh, where Hophni and Phinehas, the two sons of Eli, were priests of the Lord. Whenever the day came for Elkanah to sacrifice, he would give portions of the meat to his wife, Peninnah, and to all her sons and daughters. But to Hannah he gave a double portion because he loved her. And the Lord had closed her womb. And because the Lord had closed her womb, her rival kept provoking her in order to irritate her. This went on year after year. Whenever Hannah went up to the house of the Lord, her rival provoked her till she wept and would not eat. Elkanah, her husband, would say to her, Hannah, why are you weeping? Why don't you eat? Why are you downhearted? Don't I mean more to you than 10 sons? Church, I just want to explain to you that that is one of the funniest lines in the Bible. Women in the Old Testament, again, didn't want gold, didn't want diamonds, didn't want riches. They wanted children. They wanted children more than anything. So imagine a look, Hannah, as she's weeping and bawling, hadn't eaten, and her husband says, baby, I'm all that in a bag of corn chips. What are you crying for? Aren't I worth more than 10 sons? And she had to give him a look like, oh, no, you didn't. Hannah wanted children. And to make things worse, the other wife became a rival and began to tease her because she couldn't have children. Later, Hannah would go to the temple to pray for a child. Eli, the priest and judge, saw her praying. And after an encounter, Eli pleads to the Lord on her behalf. Eventually, Hannah has a son and names him Samuel. In her prayer to God, she said, 1 Samuel chapter 1, verse 11, O Lord Almighty, if you will only look upon your servant's misery and remember me and not forget your servant, but give her a son, then I will give him to the Lord for all the days of his life, and no razor will ever be used on his head. Hannah kept her vow, giving the son she had prayed and longed for to the Lord in his service. Samuel would grow up to be judge and rule in Israel, one who would be respected, revered, and loved. At his death, we read in 1 Samuel chapter 25 and verse 1, it says that all of Israel assembled and mourned the death of Samuel. Now here's the tale of another family. Eli, who was judge of Israel, who had two sons, Hophni and Phinehas. In chapter 2, we are told that these sons were wicked and didn't care about God. In chapter 2, verse 12, Eli's sons perverted the sacrifices of the Lord, verses 13 through 17. The sons had sex with the temple workers, which was a despicable practice, verse number 22. Their practices were known throughout the entire community. Eli attempted to rebuke the sons, but they ignored it. God, of course, was displeased and foretold of the house of Eli's destruction, chapter 2, verses 27 through 36. Meanwhile, Samuel is called into the service of the Lord and told Eli of God's plan to bring that family to its ultimate demise. In a battle with the Philistines, Hophni and Phinehas were killed. The Ark of the Covenant was captured, and upon hearing the news, Eli died, as well as the wife of one of the sons who was giving birth. So in a tale of two families, we witness the story of a family giving their heart to God in faithful allegiance to the will of God while watching the spiritual and physical destruction of another family because of their disobedience. It's amazing to see a woman like Hannah who gave everything to the Lord, even her only son at the time. Her only son, she did not hold back from giving to God. Her son, her only child. Yet we find ourselves in the 21st century trying to skim off and hold back from giving wholeheartedly to God. I'll give you a piece, I'll give you a portion, but I need to hold this for myself. Then there's a tale of two kings. Now, if you had been reading through the Old Testament so far, you would have been expecting this. In Moses' final address to the Israelites before his death, he said in Deuteronomy chapter 17, verse number 14, he says, "When you enter the land the Lord your God is giving you and have taken possession of it and settled in it, and you say, 'Let us set a king over us like all the nations around us,' be sure to appoint over you the king the Lord your God chooses. He must be from among you, your own brothers. Do not place a foreigner over you, one who is not a brother Israelite." So we knew this was coming, church. At first glance, the Israelites' demand for a king seemed justified. Samuel, we read, had two sons, Joel and Abijah, and he appointed them as judges, but they did evil. They took bribes. They perverted justice. Again, this news spread around the community, and because of the bad things that those judges did, the people cried out, "Listen, this judge stuff isn't working. We need a king." The people, in response to failed leadership of the sons, requested a king like other nations. But in reality, their request for a king flowed from a lack of faith and a desire to be like everyone else. God said in 1 Samuel chapter 8, verse number 7, "And the Lord told him, 'Listen to all that the people are saying to you. It is not you, Samuel, that they have rejected, but they have rejected me,' the Lord says, 'as their king.'" And after Samuel warned the Israelites of the reality of a harsh life under the reign of a human king, the people scoffed, 1 Samuel chapter 8, verses 19 through 20. But the people refused to listen to Samuel. "No," they said, "we want a king over us. Then we will be like all the other nations, with a king to lead us and to go out before us and fight our battles." Saul. The genesis and the driving force behind the request for a king was a spiritual rejection of Jehovah. Yet God obliged and selected a king for them. Saul became Israel's first king. He was a handsome and a tall man. Although from the small tribe of Benjamin, Saul was selected as the leader. There was a great coronation for King Saul, chapter 10. And Samuel made it clear on numerous occasions that he was not pleased, partly because God was rejected, and partly because Samuel himself felt rejected. Turn with me to 1 Samuel chapter 12. 1 Samuel chapter 12, and let's start reading at verse number 8 as Samuel is talking to the people. He says, "After Jacob entered Egypt, they cried to the Lord for help, and the Lord sent Moses and Aaron, who brought your forefathers out of Egypt, and settled them in this place. But they forgot the Lord their God, so he sold them into the hand of Sisera, the commander of the army of Hazor, and into the hands of the Philistines and the king of Moab, who fought against them. They cried out to the Lord and said, 'We have sinned, we have forsaken the Lord, and served the Baals and Ashtoreths. But now deliver us from the hands of our enemies, and we will serve you.' Then the Lord sent Jerubbaal, Barak, Jephthah, and Samuel, and he delivered you from the hands of your enemies on every side, so that you lived securely. But when you saw that Nahash, king of the Ammonites, was moving against you, you said to me, 'No, we want a king to rule over us,' even though the Lord your God was your king. Now here's the king you have chosen, the one you asked for. See, the Lord has set a king over you. If you fear the Lord and serve and obey him and do not rebel against his commands, and if both you and the king who reign over you follow the Lord your God, good. But if you do not obey the Lord, and if you rebel against his commands, his hand will be against you as it was against your fathers." Drop down to verse number 20. "Do not be afraid," Samuel replied. "You have done all this evil, yet do not turn away from the Lord, but serve the Lord with all your heart. Do not turn away after useless idols. They can do you no good, nor can they rescue you, because they are useless. For the sake of his great name, the Lord will not reject his people, because the Lord was pleased to make you his own. As for me, far be it from me that I should sin against the Lord by failing to pray for you. And I will teach you the way that is good and right. But be sure to fear the Lord and serve him faithfully with all your heart. Consider what great things he has done for you. Yet if you persist in doing evil, both you and your king will be swept away. There were rules. You can have a king, but you gotta do it God's way. If you reject God's way, destruction. If you do it God's way, blessings. It didn't take long for Saul to be rejected as king. In chapter 15, Saul is ordered to go and destroy the Amalekites. He takes matters into his own hands and takes the king and takes some of the choice lambs and bulls. God had ordered the total destruction of the Amalekites, yet Saul decided to do what he wanted. Result, God rejects Saul as king. 1 Samuel chapter 15, verses 10 through 11 says, "Then the word of the Lord came to Samuel, 'I am grieved that I have made Saul king, because he has turned away from me and has not carried out my instructions.'" That is to say that it wasn't just Saul not doing what God had said. It started with him turning away from God, turning his heart away from God. And when he turned his heart away from God, he wasn't doing what God wanted to do. God wasn't his king, and it led ultimately to his demise. But this is the tale of two kings. So then we read of David. Saul is rejected and a replacement is swiftly sought. Samuel is called to go to the house of Jesse, the grandmother of Ruth, we talked about last week. There, the youngest son of Jesse, David, who was taking care of sheep, was anointed as king in chapter 16. The rise of David and his legend was not due to him taking care of sheep or being an aspiring musician, but probably his infamous encounter with the giant Goliath in chapter 17. 5 smooth stones, and in the power and the strength of the Lord, David defeated this king with one swift blow to the head with one of those rocks. 1 Samuel 17, verse 45, David said to the Philistine, "You come against me with sword and spear and javelin, but I come against you in the name of the Lord Almighty, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied." Defeating the giant, David became the focus of the Israelites' delight as he was compared to Saul. Saul was one they would praise as one who could kill 1,000, but David was praised as one who could kill 10,000, and this created some jealousy on the part of Saul. Saul didn't like David, and because he was rejected and David was now chosen and anointed to be his successor, Saul went on this endless pursuit to kill David. The remaining story in 1 Samuel tells the story of Saul's attempt to assassinate David. With the help of Saul's son Jonathan and David's best friend, David would elude Saul's pursuit. Saul was literally driven crazy and to his own death by suicide in his pursuit of David. While David grew up, became a mighty warrior, and continued to have a heart that followed God. In this tale of two kings, we're again immersed into the picture of what it means to give your heart to God as David did, and to be blessed and to be raised up in the strength and power of God, versus one who turned his heart away from God, and it led ultimately to his destruction. David, while becoming a great warrior and fighter and great king, kept his heart with God, as if to say, no matter what situation I'm in, no matter what position I hold, God is king. I'm just playing king. A tale of two families, a tale of two kings, which leads us to a tale of the heart. A tale of two families and a tale of two kings is more the story of a tale of the heart. Namely, church, our hearts. What will we choose to do? Is God our real king? Is God our king? You see, a real king is a king that doesn't send people to fight for him. He fights for them. A church, that's my God. And he's a real king. A real king is one who leads for the benefit of the people he's leading, not selfishly for himself. Church, that's my God. And he's a real king. A real king is one who wants to bless his subjects with his wealth, not hoard it all for himself. Church, that's my God, and he's a real king. A real king is a king that has the power to take residence in the most intimate of settings, the heart of man and woman. And that's what my God has done, because that's my God, and he's a real king. The Israelites were looking for a real king. They had a real king. His name was Jehovah God, and they rejected him. He was their king. He led them. He fought for them. How many times did God say, it's not you who are winning these battles against your enemies. I'm delivering them to you. I'm fighting the battles for you. I'm winning the wars for you. He was a real king, church, but they rejected him. Several thousand years, he's still being rejected. But I'd like to stand before you today, 1649 Graham Road, and declare on behalf of this people that we are not a people who are going to reject God as king. We're going to declare this morning that God is our king. Mighty is our God, the king. Hosanna, you're my king. We're going to worship the king. He is my king, and oh, I dearly love him. Let's declare today that he is the real deal. That's my God, and he's a real king. He is a real king. He is the king of the heavens. He is the king of the earth. He is the king of this world. He is king of this community. He is king of this church, and he is king of my life. Let's declare today, church, that God is a real king, and he's the only king that we will ever need. And if he's not king of your life, call out to him right now and tell him to take his place. Take his place right now in your heart.
Holy in this place, awesome in your love, I'm longing now to know your secret ways. Worthy of my praise, name above all names, changing all I am to be like you. Jesus, I'm making you mine. You are Lord. I lift my hands. You are the giver of the sacrifice. So I boldly come before you. So I boldly come before you, Holy King. boldly come before you, Holy King.
Apologize, that just means he's at home. No more wasted time. Call on God right now to come and take his place. Come and take his place in your heart right now. Now that's a dangerous proposition to invite someone to come into your house, to come into your heart. Because know this, God is coming in with a broom. He's coming to clean it up. Because if he's going to live there, he's going to come there to clean it up. He's bringing the Murphy's oil, all the cleaning supplies. He's coming to clean it up. And he's coming to make changes. Now, Jay, I love Jay. But Jay, don't try to come over to my house and changing some rules in my house and changing the way things are set up. You don't have the right to do that. I love you, though. Now, you come eat all my food, all that stuff. But don't come changing rules in my house. It's a dangerous proposition to allow God in your heart because he's coming to change some rules. And if he's king of your life, if he's king of your heart, that means there's going to be some changes. That means the way that you make decisions isn't going to be ruled by you. It's going to be ruled by God. That means the way that your attitude is displayed isn't going to be ruled by you. It's going to be ruled by God. That means the way that you talk isn't going to be ruled by you. It's going to be ruled by God. That means what you watch and what you listen to isn't going to be ruled by you. It's going to be ruled by God. Those that you have relationships with, it's not going to be ruled by you. It's going to be ruled by God. Ask God to come take his place in your heart right now, church. And if you desire to do so, if you desire to have God to come take residence in your heart, I want to invite you to sing this song with me as a prayer to God. You are my God. You are my King.